All right, hockey fans, we are back for another week of the Obstructed View, except this time we're doing the show and there's no Red Wings team playing hockey anymore. So sad days in and around Detroit. The season has come to an end, but we're going to keep it rolling here on the Obstructed View for at least a few more weeks. I am Chris Hollis from Motown Wings and joined this week by another all-star cast, starting with the our foreign friend over there in Norway from Fight Night at the Joe. It's Andy. Andy, how you doing, man?
I'm doing fine. A little bummed that we got our ass kicked by Latvia, but I've really been happy since we found out that Ronnie Dio wasn't dead after all, so I'm good.
So Andy was up early today, well, maybe not early, maybe early for us here in the States, but watching a little Norway-Latvia in the World Championships, the Latvians with a resounding 5-0 victory there, and we were talking before the show about no Vikingstad. We need some Vikingstad for the Norwegians, and there's and Tommy Jakobsen got thrown out of the tournament, apparently, so, you know, it sounds like it's going downhill for Norway, not quite as bad for the U.S., though, as bad as the U.S., I should say, Andy.
Yeah, but the U.S. won a couple of games, so at least they're not going down.
That's true. That's true. Well, we're in the relegation round right now, so we'll see what happens. And, well, who knows? Who knows? There's always the Olympics in 4 years. But also, on the to move along on the crew here, we are bringing back, apparently now, Jess from Bingo Bangle. But now, Jess, apparently, according to your Formspring page there, you are the only reason half the people tune into the Obstructed View. So thank you for coming back. I'm expecting high numbers this week.
Oh, well, thanks. Yeah, no, I clarified that. I think everyone is just more impressed with your beard and the fact that I don't sound like an old prostitute.
So. She just talks like one.
Ah, that's true. That mouth is small. That mouth is small. And if for those of you that now might not recognize that voice that you just heard, this is a big moment for TOV. We have opened up the roster again. In fact, we've had this spot open for months now, just waiting for him to be able to make his appearance and debut on the show. And the moment is now. We proudly welcome Drew from Nightmare on Helm Street. Drew, how is it going, buddy?
It's going real well, Chris. I apologize for being so late getting into the show, but I had some technical difficulties for a long time that finally got resolved. Basically, I just had to get a new computer. I'm all set up now. I just completely expanded my social networking has gone through the roof over the past. I got onto that stupid spring form thing. I got my Twitter and everything. It's just been a real roller coaster ride, but it's been a lot of fun. Happy to be able to join.
Full circle. It has come full circle now as we bring Drew onto the show. I'm excited. And for those that, you know, that follow both of us, Drew and I have been going back and forth on you name it, Twitter, email, all of it, trying to get it worked out. I've been lazy and have been forgetting to send them emails about stuff, so it goes both ways, but it's,
I'm the only one on the show here that's in basically real time here. We got guys out in Norway, Seattle, Phoenix, but,
yeah.
You guys are on screwed up time zones.
That's right. We are out in the messed up time zone. Drew is in the center of it all, actually hustling all the way back from the lake house this weekend, getting it ready for the summer. He came all the way back just to be on the show, and we totally appreciate it. So, Drew, a big happy welcome from the TOV family. It's good to finally have you.
Well, thank you very much.
That said, let's talk about our other family that we follow ever so closely is the Detroit Red Wings here. It's been over a week since the season came to an end, guys. Obviously, falling to the Sharks. Obviously, guys, the Sharks and the Blackhawks starting their Western Conference final today, as well as the Canadiens and the Flyers starting their Eastern Conference final as the Flyers charge all the way back, embarrassing the Boston Bruins. And coming back from 3-0 down to win 4-3. But we'll focus on the Red Wings here. Obviously, the season is now over with. We've all had a chance to sit back and reflect. So, Drew, I'm going to open it up with you right now. When you look at this Wings season, after everything we've been through, going to Sweden to start the season, I know you were over there for that, coming back, struggling through the injuries, Olympic break, big post-Olympic push to get to the playoffs. When you look at the season, is it a pass or is it a fail in your mind? How are you feeling about the end of it?
It's well, much like the season itself was pretty mixed emotions. Yeah, we started. I actually paid my way to get over there to Sweden, and that was a a train wreck, everything but the hockey games, you know, turned out to be good about that trip. But a lot of disappointments, peaks and valleys with the injuries and everything. But, you know, just to finally see the team come together at the end of the season when, you know, we finally got everybody back, we started playing, you know, actual real Red Wings hockey and started steamrolling teams coming down the stretch there. And, you know, you really can't win the cup every year. And we lost, you know, 4 games to the Sharks out of 5, but we ended up, you know, with game 4 and the blowout that was, outscored them. You know, any one of those games could have went either way. So, yeah, it's disappointing for us to be talking about the postseason now when the conference finals are still going on. But I can't say that I'm all that disappointed with how the season turned out. You know, not making the playoffs would have been a huge disappointment, but just getting to that point, you know, I have to say that the season was fairly successful.
Mm-hmm. Totally. And, you know, Drew makes a point here that for this entire season, there was questions around whether or not this team was even going to make the playoffs. And now we get in and we get through the first round in an entertaining series against Phoenix. And you know, we've talked about this, but how do you feel, Jess? You know, like Drew said, it's hard to quantify this as not a success. They made the playoffs. They did what they had to do. You can't win it every year. Is that your mentality here, or are you feeling differently about things?
Absolutely. I mean, any team that can get over the loss of Kopetsky in a free agent market and still make the playoffs, that's
yeah, I just sprayed coffee everywhere.
Absolutely. I mean, what more can I say? We got over that. So, no, really, any time that they can get over, you know, the list of things that they went through with the sophomore slumps of some players, the Olympic breaks, the injuries, the Chris Osgood meltdown, rookie goaltender, I don't know. It's a successful season to me. I mean, they only lost by 1 goal each time to San Jose. The series really could have gone a whole nother way. But now I'm just looking ahead and hoping that San Jose can actually knock out Chicago.
Mm-hmm. You and me both. I know Drew's feeling the same way. I'm sure Andy's probably in the same boat, too. Now, fun fact here, Thomas Kopetsky is still in the playoffs, as well as Ville Leino still in the playoffs with the Flyers, which just chaps my ass to the nth degree. But, yeah, Andy, you look at this season, you know, we've heard from Drew, we've heard from Jess. What do you think, man? Pass or fail on this season? Did it stack up to your expectations? You happy with it, or how you feeling? I know you've been doing these player reviews all this last week, so what's the big picture look like for Andy?
I mean, it's been a weird season, and of course, my expectations before the season was that, hey, we're going to compete for things conspired to not make that happen this year, or at least make that really, really hard with all the injuries and all the weird shit that's going on. And I'm kind of happy with the way they battled through it all. I don't think they really found their identity fully back in a way that they could play their game on a consistent long-term basis, and that's probably part of what made them not win in playoffs. But I feel like they did pretty good this season, and the thing I really like is that guys like Darren Helm, Justin Abdelkader, Patrick Eves, Drew Miller, all of those guys, young guys, those guys got to play a lot more than they would usually do. They got a lot more opportunities, and they've had to play in more situations than they usually would. I mean, Miller was on a power play for a long time, for Christ's sake. I mean, they've got to learn from that, and that has to be something real good that they can take with them into the next season that ultimately makes them better players. So I'm generally happy with the season, even though it was a really weird season and didn't really go the way we wanted it to go.
True. And that's, you know, that's a good point. We talk about the development of some of these younger guys. That was a key theme for Ken Holland and company coming into this year. The injuries obviously were a big factor in all of this, and we got to see some new faces and some new names come into the lineup on a pretty regular basis. I think we are all longing for the days when Doug Janik will come back into the lineup and D up for us again. But until then, we get to this off season where plenty of free agents for the Wings this year, obviously. Restricted and unrestricted, obviously. The biggest name is Nick Lidstrom, and we will touch on him a little bit later in the show. But all sorts of names floating around out there. Ken Holland has already come out and said he plans on offering qualifying sheets to all of his restricted free agents, which is going to make it interesting when it comes time to make some decisions on who stays and who goes. But we start, obviously, one of the big points that we've been looking at, not only with Lidstrom, though, is the defense. And defensively, you're looking at Rafalski, who will be back. Cronwall will be back. Stewart will be back. But then it gets a little hairy from there. John Erickson is on the hook. They made a big financial investment in him. They're looking for him, though, to elevate his game. And then you got to fill it out. Obviously, there's the Lidstrom decision that's coming up. Jacob Kindle's a name that has been floating around as he becomes one way next year. And then the addition of rookie Brendan Smith. But guys, we look at it, and Drew, I'm going to start with you on this one. When we look at this defense next year, it's going to be with Lidstrom, without Lidstrom, whatever it is, there's going to be the opportunity for some new faces to come in. Discussion already talking about sending Brett Lebda where he's going to wind up at. Doesn't look like he's going to be back. Derek Meach, definitely. He's on the bubble, as well as Andreas Lilja, but, I don't know. What are you feeling about this defense? Jacob Kindle seems to be everybody's shoe-in to make the lineup next year, but we're hearing reports now that the Wings aren't quite as pleased with his progress as they thought they would be. What do you see this defense looking like next year as we move into the 2010-2011 campaign?
Right. It's really sad to, even contemplate losing a guy like Nick Lidstrom, who's been such a mainstay on the blue line for so long, does so many things so well. That, if we lose him, I'd almost hate to see them go out and try and fill his role with like one player. Like maybe if we sniped Sergei Gonchar away from Pittsburgh, wouldn't that be fun?
Jesus.
But I really think that it comes down to all of the players coming back, picking up their game just a little bit to compensate. We've been waiting for Cronwall to emerge into the superstar, and he's coming along, but not quite as quickly as we would have liked. But there's a lot of the defenders that do the individual aspects of what Lidstrom does so well. You have Lilja, who's really sound defensively. You have Rafalski that can chip in on the offensive side. Cronwall kind of does everything pretty okay, but Lidstrom did everything great. Mm-hmm. So, how do you replace a player like that? I don't think you do it with a one-for-one in free agency. Maybe you hope that Jakob Kindle or a Brendan Smith could step in and chip into the defensive core. But, with Lidstrom, we have one of the best defensive cores in the league, if not the best. Without him, I still think it's pretty strong. Mm-hmm. Obviously not as strong as it was, but, just sign Nick, just give us one more year and let us talk about it next year. So,
and I think,
I don't know what else to say. I we need him.
And I think you make a good point here in that, especially now, and I wonder, we read this morning, and it was from over George Malik over there on Snapshots had reposted something that, and I alluded to it earlier, that there was some comments made from Babcock and Ken Holland this week as they get ready. They will, in the first week of June, they will head into their discussions about free agents, that they weren't quite sure that Kindle came along as well as they really wanted him to, and that he needs to really elevate his game in Traverse City, in training camps, if he wants to be on this team next year. Now, it seemed like a foregone conclusion as we got into the playoffs that Kindle was on his way up next year, and there was going to be room for him, whether it was paired up with Erickson or with one of the other guys, and that, or him in that seventh defenseman position that Derek Meach seemed to hold for the most of this year. But now all of a sudden you start to look at it and say, well, if he's not ready, maybe this helps make a case to Nick to stay one more year, just to wait for him to get ready, or to give Brendan Smith that year with Grand Rapids to get himself in shape. And, Drew, you did touch on this too, and I wanted to ask you before we move it along. With Cronwall, you said, he's playing okay right now. He hasn't quite stepped it up. Obviously Croner was out with that knee injury this year. How much do you think that affected it? Is that something that's a cause here, or does Cronwall just have to get through his own head and step it up in his own right?
Yeah, I think, Has the guy gone a whole season without something breaking? You know, he needs to drink more milk or something, because it just always seems like it's his tailbone, it's his knee. You know, obviously the knee we couldn't help. That was cement head George LaRocque doing what he does. But it probably factors into it a little bit, the mental side. But you know, he's a professional. I still think that you know, 2008 and 2009, Cronwall in the playoffs was, if he can just pick his game up like that and just do that all the time, then he'll be just fine.
I agree. I think it's a combination mental thing, combination injury thing. Andy, when we look at it, you know, we've talked about the fact that they're going to have to make some decisions on Lebda, which seems like a foregone conclusion at this point. Meech is another interesting decision that's going to have to be made. Lilja on the hook now, too. The guy finally comes back for a half a season. He plays pretty well, but he's making a decent amount of money. And then the Kindle situation on what they're going to have to do with him. When you look at those four guys, which one is a must for you in the lineup next year?
Lilja, Meech, Lebda,
and Kindle, obviously. Now that that's what we're talking about. Kindle struggled, though, this year at Grand Rapids. Not sure if he's coming up, but is he a must for you in the lineup, or who is?
No, he's not a must for me in the lineup, and I don't really think any of those four guys are a must for me. As we talked about on Twitter, I really like Meech for seventh defenseman / 15th forward positions, especially since I like him better as forward, but I think Kindle has a lot of talent, but
what?
I like to work on board and draw up depth charts for the Red Wings, and when I look at play together, and I'm not sure if I trust that pairing together defensively at all, but I don't want to split Lidstrom and Volsky, and I really don't want to split Stewart and Cronwall, because when they were both healthy and together at the beginning of the season, they were absolutely excellent. So I'm kind of scared of the Kindle situation, but I would retain him and Meech if I was Ken Holland, and Lebda, I don't care about it at all, and it's kind of sad to see Lilja go, but he's just not good enough. Now, if Lidstrom leaves, then I would let Lilja go and sign Anton Volchenko for around what it makes nowadays, $3.2 million or something, and then sign another more offensive guy for around the same kind of money to fill the voids, I think.
Totally. And it'll be interesting to see what they do with that. But, you know, Jess, I'll pose the same question to you, though. We look at those four, and you look at what they're able to putting out there. Obviously, we know that Lidstrom and then Rafalski, that they're, you know, they're the anchor of that defense right now. Stewart, I think, played one of his best seasons, and people are kind of forgetting how good Brad Stewart was this year, holding up Cronwall, holding up Erickson there. But when you look at those four, is there any one that you must have back next year, or can we do better elsewhere?
I mean, I don't know if we can do better. It's kind of hard to say. None of them are really a must. It kind of would scare me a little bit if you kept the pairings the same. If Lidstrom did come back and he stayed with Rafalski, and then you had Cronwall and Stewart, and you put Kindle with Erickson, that's a little frightening. I guess that depends a lot on whether Erickson decides to show up and play this year. But, yeah, I don't know. Right now I'm just really hoping that Lidstrom comes back. That's what I'm focusing on.
Are you?
You know, maybe we could do, like, a fan page on Facebook. Did that work for Betty White and SNL? I don't know. Something. I'm racking my brain.
You
beg him. Send him a muffin basket. I don't care, but I have a feeling he's not coming back.
Well, we're putting you in charge of this, so that means you...
Of the muffin basket or the Facebook page?
I'm not going anywhere near the muffin basket. I have nothing to say about that.
Geez.
We will make you the fan book page person. You can take that on, because I got nothing else for that, but... But I think it, the sentiments echo the point that we're not going to see anything happen, I don't think, other than qualifying offers go out to those defensemen until Lidstrom makes a decision on what he's going to do. So, go ahead.
And I think Cronwell will be better this season, too. I mean, if you look at it, actually, at the beginning of the season when he was healthy, he was at times the best defenseman that the Wings had. He really did finally play really well at the beginning of last season. But after the knee injury, he came back and he looked good. But when he re-injured it and was out for, what, like another like 7 games or something like mm-hmm. that, that's when his play really seemed to dip down. So hopefully, if he comes back healthy after this next surgery, it'll be a better season.
Yes. Cronwell getting a little work done. Thank you, George LaRocque, by the way, for that, as Drew alluded to earlier in the show. What an ass. So, anyways. anyways, as we, the defense will be interesting next year. It'll be interesting to see what happens. I kind of like the, and you know, sacrilege here. I mean, I like all of these guys. I think Lebda is a foregone conclusion that he's gone. He's making too much money and just, he's destined to be in Toronto with his former defensive line mate or defensive buddy there and Dion Phaneuf. It just seems like a good fit, an underachieving team. So
oh my God.
I feel like that's where he's headed. I'm just saying. I feel like that's where he's off to. But you look, I like the idea of keeping Meech around, and I know people are going to say, like, holy crap, why? The versatility that the guy possesses, if we've learned anything from this season, it's that injuries can happen at any time, and they can come in boatloads, and I like the fact that you can plug Meech up into the forward position if need be. You can roll him back on defense. He's a little more versatile than, say, an Andreas Lilja, who Lilja, sound defensive player right now, and that's going to be his strong suit. The problem is that his physicality has dropped off ever since that Weber injury, and you could see it a little bit in the playoffs. He didn't quite have that nasty streak that, you know, you're used to seeing from him. But at the same time, he's also a little more responsible. He's not making quite as many bad plays as he maybe did in 2006-2007. So
he's spending all of his time trying to cover him up for number 52.
That's exactly right. For God's sake, John Erickson. So, and that's, you know, Erickson. Good Lord, man, just stay home. Just like don't that get where we lost when we lost in overtime in that game 3 or whatever. When frickin' Erickson went hauling ass through the middle of the zone in overtime trying to score a goal, I wanted to just stab him. And then Williams blasts one nowhere near the net. Thank God he's not coming back. I'm very excited about that, by the way. But, yeah.
Is that official?
Nothing's official yet, but if they re-sign Jason Williams, I'm handing over the reins to the show to somebody else because I'm done with the Red.
No, yeah.
I'm done with them.
You're right. It's not going to happen. It's just that whole situation. That was the, you know, even after game 5, I did get to go see game 4 in person, which was nice. You get to go watch him kick ass one last time and play Red Wings hockey, but When they lost game 3 in OT, that even I was more upset at that than I probably was when game 5 ended and we lost, because, you know, going down 0-3 and, you know, after seeing Billy Lano and the Philadelphia Flyers come back from 0-3, I guess it hurts a little bit more now, but that was the season for me, basically. Mm-hmm. You know, that was when I got really pissed off. You got, you know, your fourth line winger going out there trying to be a hero, blasts the puck over the net, and couldn't have worked out more perfectly from San Jose, who is changing in the midst of a line change while Detroit's skating the puck down the ice. It's like the cardinal rule of line changes is to not do it when the other team is on the offense. They do it. Williams blasts the puck over. It's a perfect outlet pass. They go down. Rafalski's all lost and confused, and it's a tap-in for freaking Marlowe. So, I mean, that was just that is the low point for me, emotionally, where, you know, when it was game 5 and the buzzer sounded and we lost by one goal again, it was just like, well, you know, we kind of saw this coming, but I didn't mean to.
No, you're fine. And that's
to go off on a tangent there. So
it's a great point, though, because you also, I think game 3, and I think we can all agree on this, you know, is that game 3 was probably the lowest point for all of us in that not only did we lose in overtime, we pissed away a 2-goal lead to get to that point. And it was on a terrible goal, obviously. We've talked about it. And, you know, Howard, I don't even want to think about that goal. It was bad, but you can't blame everything on Howard. We've talked about, that's been a theme of the show all season, is you can't pin all the bad moments on Howard. Yeah, he makes some mistakes, it's gonna happen, and he did. But to see the team just kind of, you know, fold inward in that position where they really had a chance to punch back, I think it just kind of spoke volumes of where we were at that point. And it was definitely frustrating, but hey, it is what it is. Like you said, Drew, when we started the show, you can't win them all. And that's obviously what's happened at this point. But we now go ahead.
Williams missing that shot was, I think, the final nail in the coffin for anybody that was still holding on to a thread, mm-hmm. you know, the thinnest of threads about keeping this guy on for another year if he would sign it at comparable price. I, for one, was actually kind of looking forward to getting him back at the beginning of the season because I thought that we let him go. You know, come to find out afterwards that it was because he and Babcock didn't get along. But, you know, we let him go for Kyle Calder. Traded him away to Chicago. Calder plays like a horse's ass. He actually ended up being a healthy scratch after the first round of the playoffs mm-hmm. and then signed back with L.A. after the season was over. So basically we gave away Jason Williams for nothing. Yep. So I was all for bringing him back, give him another shot. It's just not a good fit, and you know, thanks for the breakout pass in Game 3, Williams. We'll catch you.
Yeah, we'll catch you when you're back in Columbus or wherever the hell you're going. But you know, that's a good transition up to as we move. Let's take a quick look at that. We'll take a peek at the offense. Obviously, decisions to be made here. We've talked all season about Eaves. It looks like I'm guessing Eaves will be back next year, and I'm guessing he's going to get a little bit of a pay increase. He had a great season. Obviously, Abdelkader, he's moving up to the full time. He'll be in a full time staple in the Red Wings roster. I think the big question mark, so guys, you look at a guy like Drew Miller. Can the Wings find a way to get him back? He's still a restricted free agent. They can make a qualifying offer to him, but. You know, Drew, you touched on it with when Williams went out, Riddle came in, didn't really make a ton of noise in the playoffs, but it was comparable, and I think he did just as much and maybe a little bit more than Williams could do. And then, obviously, one of the guys that is going to be a tough, tough decision to make this year is Kirk Maltby. So, and Jess, I'm going to start with you on this one. When you look at the situation up front, especially the Maltby situation, you've got a guy that's been pretty much a lifer with the Wings. The Wings would like to bring him back. I know they would, but it's a matter of space at this point. What do you think is going to happen with Kirk Maltby?
I don't know. I think they'll be loyal to him to a degree. Maybe he'll spend some time in Grand Rapids, kind of like Brad May did this season. But I don't know. It's kind of like you have that old nostalgia feeling where you feel bad if you get rid of Kirk Maltby. But at the same time, there's really just not a spot. There's not room in the lineup with all the young guys that are coming in that could make a bit more of an impact.
Sure. And Andy, you know, we've talked about it this year. Ken Holland said this year was a transition year. We saw some of that some of those younger guys come in. I think next year is going to be even more of a transition year in a lot of aspects. And when you look at Maltby and you look at the need to get some of these younger guys in there, is there a spot for Maltby in that lineup? Would you rather see a Drew Miller in that lineup, or would you rather see somebody like a Kirk Maltby getting that one last year so he can finish it out with Chris Draper?
I have to echo what I said here when we were talking before the Olympic break. I think, for one thing, Kirk Maltby has played his best hockey since the lockout this year. I think it's been better than ever, or since the lockout, of course. And I think that Wings will try and retain him because of the loyalty thing. But when I draw up my depth charts, he's not among the 14 forwards. I find no way to fit him in, but obviously, there is going to be injuries, and hopefully they can get him to sign a deal, keep him a little in Grand Rapids, and get him to play a little at least, and let him finish his career with Chris Draper. When it comes to Drew Miller, I think him coming back is... I think he's coming back because Holland's going to qualify him, and when you saw how Drew Miller talked on that thank you video, it seemed pretty obvious that he enjoys the hell out of himself in Detroit, thinks it is a great place to play, and, I mean, he kind of grew up there, and also he's found himself as a player in a very different way and in a much better way than ever before in Detroit, so I don't think he's even thinking of leaving. And when it comes to Ritola, I struggle getting him into the roster, but I'd really like to see him make it because I really like him. But I'd go with Miller as the first priority of those three and then Maltby because, I mean, my blog's called Fight Night at the Joe. I can't in any way go negative on Maltby ever.
I mean, that's true. And, you know, Drew, when you look at this situation, same thing to you. They're going to have to move some pieces around to get some players in there. Obviously, you know, Scuttles is coming back over from the KHL. He wants to get back in the lineup, and there's going to be a spot for him because he can score. So you get Yuri Hudler back in the lineup. Bertuzzi's another question mark. The guy obviously wants to stick around. Is he going to be able to? That'll be interesting to see. You know, they've got to find ways. I think the namesake over at your joint, he's up for a raise at this point. You know, they're going to do everything they can to lock him up to a sizable deal. But
they better.
They really should. I mean, you know, they should put a clause in his contract that says within 2 years he learns how to finish on a breakaway. I really just put that in there and you know.
Game 7 of Anaheim, he finished on a breakaway. I don't think he hasn't done it since.
He should get a bonus for every time he pots one on a breakaway. That's what I would write in there. But you look at it like, Drew, there's some decisions that have to be made. What is the ideal lineup in your mind for next season with all of the options that are out there right now, with any direction that the Wings could go with their lineup? What looks best to you? What do you want to see happen?
Well, oh, geez, that's a loaded question. And it all depends on a few guys that need to make decisions about what they want to do. Obviously, Lidstrom is a big one. And I kind of tongue in cheek before this season even started, when they were talking about Kovalchuk in Atlanta, saying that, you know, at the summer of 2010, he was going to be signing with Detroit to come over here and win a cup. Now, if Lidstrom's contract comes off the books, if he decides to retire, that might actually be a somewhat viable option. That's why I wanted Datsyuk in his ear at the Olympics, mm-hmm. although I'm not exactly sure he'd be the best Red Wings representative to send. You know, I have a feeling that Datsyuk actually speaks Russian about as well as he speaks English. I just get this picture in my head that nobody understands him at any time.
That's part of his allure, man. That's part of the mystery.
Oh, isn't it though? So, in terms of Bertuzzi, I say if you can get him for $1.5 million or even two, sign him. Get that done. Get Eves in for 3 years. Helm for 3 years if you can. And Maltby, I'm kind of back and forth on, because I don't think there's fewer things in sports that are sadder than a guy trying to hold on for too long. And really wearing out his welcome, especially when we've got all these young kids that are trying to come up. So with Maltby, I think, and I think he understands that his role is going to be limited. If we can't sign Eves, Miller, and Helm, if we can't sign all three of them, then maybe there's a spot on him for the fourth line. And it's different with him because you're not expecting him to go out and score, you know, 10, 20, 30 goals in a season. That, you know, when he's a fourth line grinder, he might be more effective in that role than a Matias Rotola, who's kind of like a Jason Williams, who's more of a finesse game. And you put a finesse player on the fourth line, and you get Billy Leino, you get Jason Williams, you know. So if we can get Rotola back in Grand Rapids, maybe give him another year to develop and bring up and have Maltby in that fourth line spot, then I'd be okay with that. But as far as filling out the roster spots, it really depends on what they're going to do with all of the RFAs. And then you have the Oompa Loompa coming back, who actually makes almost as much as we were paying both Bertuzzi and Williams combined. So that's not chump change. He's almost making Chris Letang money, for Christ's sake. So, yep, a lot of tough decisions to be made. But regardless, you know, we have the best GM in sports at the helm, and pun intended.
Nice one.
Yeah. So, you know, in Holland we trust.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Yeah. I agree with that. You know, it'll be – there are decisions to be made. And I totally agree with you on the Bertuzzi situation. I know that Mike Petrella will not agree with us on this one. That's fine. You know, to each their own. But I think Bertuzzi has served a role, and he's done enough to earn that – extension for a year or two, and then I think that's it for him. I think he's done anyways, and I think he brings a valuable kind of mindset and work ethic to this team that could rub off on some of those younger guys, hopefully, you know. But here's the thing, within two years now, when you look at the bigger picture, this Wings team will be completely transformed from what it is right now in terms of that they'll have lost guys probably like Maltby will be gone. Draper will be gone. It's hard to see Lidstrom here in 2 years. It's hard to see, you know, it's hard to see, any number of these guys. Bertuzzi still.
Homer
will probably be gone in 2 years. And if anybody's earned an extension, it's been Thomas Holmstrom this season. The guy, it's an injury thing. I think it's a health thing for him, whether or not he comes back this year. Can he stay healthy? And, you know, it's amazing that he got through this season and put up one of his most productive seasons ever for the Wings. So
get those skate guards on. Tom,
seriously,
please.
For God's sake, just put them on, especially if Brett Lepp is out there taking practice shots with you. But, you know, I'd like to see Homer back one more year. I think that he has a lot to offer, you know, for guys like, for the younger guys like, Abdelkader and even Miller might be able to learn a thing or two from him, but it's going to be interesting to see how it all shakes out. There's definitely some decisions to be made, not only for the lineup, but also we touched on it, Drew, you hit on it a little bit in the front office. Obviously one of the other things that's been, top of mind for a lot of us over the past week or so is the chatter that Steve Yzerman has been interviewing for the GM position in Tampa Bay. He was one of the top three candidates that we heard about throughout the week. Late last week, David Pagnotta over at the Fourth Period issued a report basically saying that Yzerman has taken his name out of the running, and there's been some back and forth out of that. Drew, I know you and I both picked up on that with our blogs. And then now Bruce Garriott from the Ottawa Sun-Times, I believe it is saying the same thing that Stevie has essentially pulled out. But bigger situation, and Jess, I'm going to start with you on this one, is that we've heard Mike Ilitch has asked Ken Holland to move up and become team president in order to make way for Yzerman to become the GM. Holland has said no twice, citing that he was hired to be a GM and that's what he wants to be. And obviously the man has earned first right of refusal for all of the work that he's done. But is that something that you want to see? Would you rather have Ken Holland move up to the president's position to keep Stevie around as a GM? Or would you rather say, hey, we have the best in the business at the GM helm right now. You know, thanks for everything, Stevie, but you know, best of luck. What are you feeling about this right now?
Oh, Jesus, that's a loaded question.
I'm throwing them out. This is what I'm doing today. Wow. It's off season. Wow. All I can do is throw loaded questions around.
There's nothing good you can do with that one. I don't know. I mean, it would be sad to see Steve Yzerman go. I never really thought he would go to Tampa Bay. What a terrible situation to walk into. It's run by like drunken monkeys over there. Awful, awful. I cannot imagine he'd go there. But I don't really know where would be a good situation right now, so I'm not really that concerned about Yzerman leaving. You can't really go wrong. If something's, you know, not broken, don't fix it. I like having Holland, you know, in his position that he is right now. Maybe extend his contract for a couple of years, and then maybe at that point he'll want to slow down and let Yzerman become, you know, get into that GM position, or at least that's what I'm crossing my fingers and hoping will happen in a perfect world.
Yeah, that would be, you know, I think everybody wants to have their cake and eat it too with this situation, and it looks like, at least for the time being, that Stevie's going to kind of just hold the rope here, hold the line, and stay with where he's at. But Andy, what about it? Like, do the Wings need to have that mentality where they have to find a way to keep Yzerman no matter what it takes, or is it something that someday they may just have to let him go?
That's really hard to answer. I mean, Stevie Yzerman, I mean, he's the greatest player I've ever seen, and losing him would, I can't imagine how I would feel if that happened, but Kenny Holland, I mean, he's earned the right to do whatever the fuck he wants in Detroit. So, I mean, if he doesn't want to step down, then of course he shouldn't step down, but as Jess said, I would like to see him sign on for, like, a limited time period and have the club spend it. You know, he's going to step down at that time, and then you're going to be the general manager here, and if that will happen or not, I don't know. I would really like to see it happen, and maybe with a little transition period where Stevie learns what to do. But it's really hard to say what's going to happen. I mean, Kenny Holland is the general manager, and that's what we have to run with. But at least Stevie isn't going to Tampa Bay Lightning, because then Alan Walsh is going to come and kick his ass, I think. And I'm I would really like to see Pierre Maguire get that job, but I know the hockey gods hates me and wants him to torture me on the TV, so that's not going to happen.
You know what? Apparently he's still the front runner for this thing right now, which just blows my mind. It totally blows my mind that somebody would be. Yes, Scotty Bowman. You talked to Scotty Bowman about Pierre Maguire, and you know, he was one of the guys. He came up under Scotty, and Scotty has a lot of faith in him, but I don't know about that.
Anything. Get him off of the TV.
I know. That's how I feel, Drew. I totally feel the same way. But what about you, Drew? When we look at this, you know, Yzerman situation, it's tough. Like Jess and Andy Bull said, it's tough to comprehend the captain potentially not being a part of this organization. But with everything that Ken Holland has done, there's a chance it becomes a reality. What do you see happening? What works best in your mind for this?
Steve's just got to be patient. It's simple as that. He's, you know, going to head up Team Canada at the Olympics and then winning the gold obviously has whetted his appetite to move up to the general manager position. And right now he's kind of like Prince Charles across the pond over there waiting for mama to die so that he can take
the throne.
But it's Kenny Holland, and we won with Kenny Holland as GM before Steve Yzerman was in the office. If he wants to leave, you know, I'll wish him well. If he wants to flex his general manager muscles at another team, preferably in the Eastern Conference, that's, you know, I can't wish him anything but the best. And we move forward with the guy that brought us to the dance.
Yeah, totally. And it's hard to see otherwise. I mean, even with the guys that they have in there, Devilano, who came before, obviously Holland has a couple of Stanley Cups under his belt as a GM with Detroit, and he's still in there making decisions. Jim Nill's around there. You know, these guys, it's a situation where they've got so many smart guys in there that, you know, if Yzerman is willing to sit back and wait for the, and he says this, he wants the right opportunity. Well, I think that the right opportunity is either A, Detroit, or it's going back to Ottawa or something like that, if they ever have something open up for him. I'd like to see Yzerman kind of stick around and wait it out. Ken Holland is a fabulous GM. He's going to be the GM, but you never know what could happen. Holland may take an extension and decide in 2 years that, you know what, he's tired of grinding it out like this. He wants to move up to a more senior position, and then all of a sudden, boom, Yzerman is right there ready to go. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens. I think, you know, if we can keep him – every year that we keep Stevie in the front office is a year closer to potentially getting him to where he wants to be. So we'll have to wait and see how it goes. But it's just another thing to keep in mind as we move through this offseason of fun here. But this is the point, guys, where we like to take the listener questions, and we had a pair this week that came in. We've sort of touched on each of them a little bit here, but we'll start with Brad Butlin from over at Datsuki and Geek. Brad wants to know, when you look at this roster for Detroit next season, which Red Wing do you think needs to step it up next season if the roster stays the same or we have the similar pieces in place from what we saw this season? So, Drew, I'll start with you. Looking across the board, who's got to step it up next season for the Red Wings?
Filppula. And I've been saying that every single season since he came on board. You know, he's a little bit Datsuk, he's a little bit Zetterberg, but not even close to being either of them. And he started to really pick his game up in the playoffs this year. I was really happy to see that. I think there was just an article posted where he was quoted saying that he can provide more. So I think that's one guy that can produce more and should produce more and hopefully will produce more. And I think that Danny Cleary, with another if he can stay in for all 82 games, is one of those guys that can really pull on the rope and provide secondary scoring. Other than that, and I think I wanted to say Cronwall too, because I think, especially if Lidstrom goes, we're going to need a lot more offensive output, because that might just put him right smack dab on that first power play unit with Rafalski. So start shooting some pucks this summer, Cronwall, just in case Nick doesn't come back.
Totally. I totally agree at that. That's one of those sentiments where, man, Cronwall, get it on net, buddy. Get it on net. We know you can do it. But Jess, I'll throw the same question out to you that from Brad. He wants to, you know, which wing's got to step it up this year?
Erickson, especially if Lidstrom leaves. He actually has to start playing well, return to form where he was in the playoffs last year. I mean, there's really not a choice. He actually has to start playing well. You know, when we lose Lebda, we're not going to have a whipping boy, and I certainly hope that Erickson doesn't turn into that new one, because they're going to need him to start playing well.
Yes. Yes. Andy, same to you. Who's stepping it up?
I of course, agree with all these guys. And when it comes to Phil Plot, I said this last time I was on, and I would say it again, I'd like them to keep him on the wing with guys like Zetterberg, because he can't hold on to the puck too long there and try to do too much. He relaxes a little bit more, and I think he's much more efficient there. Of other players, I think Franzen has to be a little more consistent than he's been when he's played this year, and I think he will be, because he'll probably feel a little better, and just him getting back is going to be, and back to health and back for 82 games, hopefully, is going to be a huge step forward for this group. And I'm going to go a little off the wall here, and it's really the same thing I always say, Pavel Datsyuk. I mean, I don't know anything about the skies and stars, but there must have been something strange after the day he was born, because he has a talent I've never, ever seen in a hockey player before. But he doesn't use that to the full limits that he can use it to more than a fourth or fifth of the time. I mean, it's still good, but when a guy is on, he's amazing, and he isn't that – he doesn't play that to that level as often as he should be, and I'd really like to see him step up and have a consistent season.
Now, speaking of the stars, obviously we could go to our resident a sky gazer in Jess here, because she obviously knows all about what's going on up there. But I think you could make a case for anybody on this team. I think, you know, we touched on Franz, and if he's healthy, the guy should put up somewhere around 40 goals next year. I mean, the guy has the talent to do so. It's a state of mind for him at this point. I think Zetterberg is less about big production, more about timely production for him. He's going to be stepping into that captain's role within the next couple of years, it feels like. And I think it's kind of just refining him out to be that leader and showing that, you know, he can get it done in the clutch when the team needs it. So for me, I think obviously for a guy that needs to step it up, I'm looking for my favorite player in the entire world, Hattrick Dick Axelsson, to step it up on the mental game a little bit. You know, he has said he wants to make this team. He can do it. He's coming over for camp, and you know what? If he doesn't make it, then hey, you know what? Good riddance to you, Dick. But I got to get my hat trick, Dick, in there. But wow, that came out wrong. But anyways, on a serious level, I think you got to look at Erickson. You make a great It's just you can name it for Hudler. I think Hudler's my guy that's going to have to step it up, though. And Drew, you touched on it. The amount of money this guy's making. And all the crap that we went through with him last year during the off season, and him bolting and kind of tying our hands, and we wind up.
Yeah, he's the one that really screwed us.
Exactly. It's him. He's the reason we had to deal with Jason Williams this year, you know?
Well, yeah, we let Sammy walk, you know, let Sammy walk to hopefully re-sign Hossa if we could. That was the one that really blindsided us, and if we could have kept Sammy this year, then who knows what this season would have been like. But what can you do except welcome Happy back with open arms and say, all right, well, here's your $3 million a year, go score us some freaking goals.
That's exactly the case, and he's, you know, the weight of the world is on him, and I think he knows that. But him and Phil Pula, you know, they could do a lot for themselves to kind of. Excuse me, turn that corner, and let's hope so, man. Let's get some of that offensive production back. So that's who I'm looking at that needs to step it up. But the other question that we got from Rob over at Etched in Cold, he wants to know.
Hey,
go ahead, Andy.
Yeah, I've got one more guy that maybe doesn't have to step it up, but that has to really at least maintain what it's doing and maybe even elevate it a little bit, and that's Brad Stewart, because if we look at this team, until Cronwall gets his game fully back together, and, I mean, Rafalski's going older, until Cronwall gets back to top shape, Brad Stewart is the second best defenseman on this team, and if Lidstrom leaves, he's going to be the best defenseman on this team, and he has to be as good as this season or better. If not, we're screwed defensively.
Yes. Brad Stewart, God, I mean, what the pressure this guy is now under. Andy's putting him on the spot after one of his best seasons ever. And then, you know, and that's, but I agree. Brad Stewart seems to be the most consistent next to Lidstrom defenseman that we have out there. Rafalski, you can make a case for Rafalski needing to step his game up. He was non-existent for most of the season in terms of production, and then costly turnovers in the playoffs. The game winner in game five is on Rafalski's stick on a bad clearing pat. It's like, you know, the best hockey Rafalski played this year was in the Olympics. The guy was lights out in the Olympics. He was basically leading the entire competition in scoring. So I don't know. You make a case for almost anybody, but getting back to Rob's question here that he just sent in, and Drew, I'm going to start with you on this one, is he wants to know, what are some reasonable free agent acquisitions you'd like to see this season based on whoever's coming back? So name the situation and go with it.
Well, unreasonable kind of takes my Kolar Chuck. That's kind of like... the chief was absolutely convinced that Hossa was coming back. He was going to be a wing for life, and we know how that story ended. But, you know, Lidstrom doesn't come back. That's $7.45 million that's a $7.45 million carrot we can dangle out in front of Kobe's face. Cause I think the guy is an absolute world-class player. I've never seen a player in the NHL be able to take a game over like that guy can, and him in a Wings jersey would just be phenomenal. But reasonable, I'd have to go with you know, someone more like an Anton Volchenkov who might actually be a viable option if Lidstrom doesn't come back to help fill, you know, at least the defensive aspects that we lose with Lidstrom out of the lineup. And you bring in you know, a Volchenkov, and then why hold on to a Lilja when Volchenkov can play that defenseman role, block shots, you know, cover Eriksson's ass for all the turnovers that he does in our zone. Don't know why he insists on passing the puck out in front of our own net, but he does it, and we need somebody there to cover up for him. But yeah, other than that, I haven't really thought of the free agent market, just because I'm really just hoping that we can re-sign our RFAs on the offensive end. And like Jesse, I'm just keeping my fingers crossed that Lidstrom comes back for at least one more year.
Totally. Jess, do you any free agents that are jumping out at you right now?
Yeah, I'm kind of like Drew. I haven't really thought about it that much with everything that's going on with the Wings lineup internally right now, but if Lidstrom doesn't come back, maybe looking at picking up one or two other defensemen. And then, you know, you move Meech out and maybe Kindle doesn't come up. So I would say you'd have to look at bringing in a couple defensemen. You can get someone for around $3 or $4 million. That's probably where they would need to sign. We're pretty set as far as forwards go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Andy, to you?
I've not really thought about it either, and I'm going to have to discredit TJ Selleck and Wingsroad212 from Twitter here for throwing some links my way when I desperately asked for them this morning, but I've kind of looked through the list of all the free agents, and if Lidstrom goes, I would like Derek Morris, who makes $3.3 million a year, and Anton Volchenko, who makes $3.2 million a year, to replace him. And if not, I don't see any big free agent signings. I mean, if the RFAs doesn't sign, I think a guy like Stefan Yell could be a great 14th forward to come in. He doesn't make almost no money at all. And, I mean, he'd be a great leadership guy if guys like Maltby or Draper goes away or any of the RFAs goes away. But I don't really see any free agent signing. I would kind of like to trade Huler for Mike Knubel, but I think Knubel makes a little more money, so that won't happen. But I'm really unsure about Huler and would like to trade him for someone just because I don't feel right about
him. Wow, bold statement. We want to move him. He's not even back in the team yet, and Andy's already writing him off. I mean,
he betrayed us. Simple
well,
as that.
I could probably get on board with that just by the fact that, you know, we still don't have that quintessential power forward, you know, a guy, we have Bertuzzi, but, you know, he's not the same player that he used to be. But if we could find somebody that for Hudler's money that can bang, you know, the opposition's defenseman on the ice, of course, that can make them pay, you know, that can play in front of the net, and be that physical force. If we can trade away Hudler to bring in a power forward, I could be on board with that.
Okay. I mean, I could see that. I think it's we'll see what happens with it. I don't know. Nobody's really jumping to my mind. I just know, here's the thing. As I know that Chicago's going to have a tough time keeping everybody around in that lineup. And I don't even care who it is that we go get. I feel like we just need to go tit for tat and go get somebody from Chicago and bring them back to Detroit. You know, they obviously wanted to scoop up Kopetsky and Hossa. You know, maybe we go get, I don't know.
Patrick Scherzer.
No. God, yeah. All the ladies.
All the Twitter ladies.
All the Twitter girls would be going nuts. The fangirls would be. Everybody's in love with Patrick Sharp. I was thinking more of along the lines like a guy like Jalmerson on defense, perhaps. I mean, but, you know, Sharp is enough.
We could steal Burris.
What's that?
Burris is a free agent.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. There's a lot of guys there that it'll be interesting.
Bifuglian?
Bifuglian. Apparently he's a.
Bifuglian?
Oh, my God. How do you get Bufflin out of that? Like, that's just.
My mind is. Yeah, I mean, that's three syllables, not two.
It's like that damn volcano that we were talking about, Andy. The one that is just like, it looks like a cat typed on a keyboard. And apparently the one in Iceland, that makes a word. And I don't understand how all these letter combinations can make words. Maybe we need an English major on the show. Maybe we'll make that next week.
The thing is, in Scandinavian languages, where you, when you put two words together, like schoolyard, you put them as two words. But in the Scandinavian languages, we pull them together and use them as one word. That's why those words get so long and weird.
Nice. Lessons on Scandinavian from Andy. It's one of my favorite points when we bring Andy on here, because he's always letting us know something that's going on over there and how to do this, because I'm clueless on it. But it'll be interesting, obviously, to see guys what they do. You get the impression early that if they bring all of these guys back, it could be a pretty quiet off season for the Wings. They feel like they could that they can compete with the guys that they have there. But like you said, Drew, if Lidstrom makes the decision to move and we've got another $7.5 million just to kind of dangle around there as bait. Who knows who you can get for that kind of money? I mean, you're talking, that's big money that you can put at somebody. Kovalchuk, obviously, will be the crown jewel of the class at this point, but there's players to be had and we'll see what Detroit does, but
I'm not holding my breath.
Neither am I. I'm not either. They want to get somebody it sounds like can grind, like you guys said, was a little bit of a grinder. I'd like to see somebody with a little more, like, scoring touch other than, like, somebody like Mike Greer, who's pretty much not going to score goals for you, but
you've got Patrick Marleau for that sum.
Patty Marleau, huh? You know, anyway, maybe we just go get, let's go get Joe Thornton, bring him on in, you know? No, I'd pass. Anyway, Mike Comrie, now there's a guy, he's on the market now. Petrella's talked to me about this, but Mike Comrie's another guy that I definitely don't want anything to do with, though, and I, you know, that's sacrilege. He's a Michigan guy, I'm a Michigan guy that I, you know, but I don't want
him. Isn't he dating Carrie Underwood?
No, he's engaged.
No, Hillary
he's
Duff.
He's engaged to Hillary Duff.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Come on, get your gossip
that's
straight, Drew.
Who is that? Is that Mike? Who is the one that's dating Carrie Underwood? Mike? He's up at...
Mike Fisher. Fisher.
Mike Fisher in Ottawa. Yeah. That's it.
I got my hot blondes mixed up. I'm sorry.
Mike Comrie is the guy who grinds his teeth at night, so Hillary Duff has to sleep in another room. Wasn't pathetic.
Did you just pull that out of your ass?
No, it was some fuck daddy a couple of weeks ago.
Wow.
Okay.
Wow. Dude, Andy, deep digging for us right now. That's impressive, man. But no, I mean, like, Comrie's out there. We'll see what happens with him. But the guy can score, but, you know, whatever. Apparently he can score with Hillary Duff, too. Could you imagine having Lizzie fucking McGuire at a Red Wings game? It'd be worse than Jessica Simpson and Tony Romo. I mean, it'd be awful. Oh, so anyways, as we move to wrap this thing up, guys, we get to the final word on what's going on. And usually this is obviously the point where I just let you guys talk about whatever you want to talk about, and say it. But I'm going to tee one up for you this week, guys. And I'm going to say from here on out until it's made, the decision is made. We're going to relabel the final word. We're going to relabel it Decision Gate. And we're going to talk about, it's going to be all about Nick Lidstrom, and it's going to be about how you feel about Nick Lidstrom this week. So, Andy, I'm going to start with you. the Lidstrom situation, it is what it is. You can use this to talk about how you feel about it. You can make a plea to Nick Lidstrom to stay around. But what do you think is happening with Nick Lidstrom right now? Is he staying or is he going?
First of all, how do I feel about Nick Lidstrom right now? I want to swim over to Michigan, kiss his feet, and get down my knees to beg him. He is, as I stated, I think he's the best defenseman to ever play the game, and to lose him would be horrible because he's still, to me, the most valuable defenseman and or maybe player in the league. And right now, I mean, I was really scared when that home Westeros private school thing came out, but that turned out to not be as scary as we thought. And I mean, he just has so much good hockey left in him, and I think he sees that it's a team that can compete for the next couple of seasons. So I think he wants to stay. I think he personally wants to stay, but I think his wife wants to get home to Westeros, which is mind-boggling because that's a shitty, ugly little town. But I've been there. I didn't enjoy it at all. But she wants to go, he wants to stay, and that's a big dilemma. But, I mean, my religion tells me that I cannot believe he's gone or going until he's gone, so I'm going to have to say he's staying. So,
Andy feels like he's staying. We might, it sounds like we might have a developing Chris Pronger situation on our hands, according to Andy, with Mrs. Pronger here, or Miss Lidstrom saying, hey, let's go home. I don't know. Jess, let's go to the female point of view on this when you look at the situation. What do you got for us? Is he staying? Is he going? Are you begging him to stay? What do you got? What do you got in the chamber for us here?
Of course I would beg him to stay, but I don't know. My gut's telling me he's gone. I don't know. I don't see him coming back. I wish he would. I wish. I want. But I don't know. I don't see him
Make your plea
back.
Or something. Let's right. go.
Make my plea. I'm in the process of creating my Betty White inspired Facebook page right now. So hopefully, if it works for Betty White, it should work for Nick Lidstrom.
And the muffin basket, apparently too.
And the muffin basket.
Yeah.
Which apparently can be taken both ways, which is disgusting.
We're not going anywhere further than that. We're gonna leave it at that. And Drew, I'll give you the final honors, man. As the new guy on the show this week. What do you got for us on Lidstrom, man?
I feel like if he was to come back is an easy decision. It's a yes, I'm going to do it. The longer he waits, the more Brett Favre-esque this turns into, the worse it is. I remember Kwame pulling up Hasek at the parade onto the stage and pleading for him, you know, one more year. They got the crowd chanting and everything, and he pulled out his, you know, I don't want too much pressure. It's too much pressure. And he wouldn't make up his mind there, and I knew at that moment that he was leaving. And the longer that decision gate goes on, the worse I'm going to feel about it. But I'm with you guys. Lidstrom's got a lot more that he can offer. He might not be worth the $7.45 million. But, again, just like Kenny Holland, if he wants it, you know, who are we to refuse Nick Lidstrom? He's the perfect human. He's the best defenseman to ever play the game. And I can't take fault with whatever decision he decides to make, but hope to hell that he comes back for at least one more season.
I think it's two or none.
What was that, Andy?
I think it's gonna be 2 years or none at all because his kid has 2 years left of high school, and I just feel it would make. I think I've got a feeling that it would make much more sense for him to stay 2 years or none
well,
at all.
I'll take two, Andy. I'll take 2 years. I'm asking for one. If he wants to sign for two, I'm not gonna fight him on that.
No, I don't think there. I don't think anybody would at this point. I know I sure as hell wouldn't, but I'm feeling optimistic. I still think, you know, some of the comments he made after being eliminated, I think the one that stands out in my mind is that he feels like he hasn't accomplished everything that he wants to yet. He has things he still wants to accomplish. You hear that?
That was a bad year. It was a bad year for
sure
him.
Sure was.
From 2009 and 2010, he had the surgery thanks to Patrick Sharp in the playoffs last mm-hmm. year. He got blown out in the Olympics. They lose in the second round of the Stanley Cup. Like, why would you want to go out on a note like that?
Yep. I totally agree. And I think that's the point. Those are the guys that feel like they have more to accomplish and say that are the ones that usually come back. It's harder to walk away from a game when you feel like you haven't done it all. I think maybe if he was really serious last year, might have been the opportunity for him to say, like, man, we got all the way to another game seven. We gave it everything, and we just couldn't. Maybe that was the time. But not after a second round, you know, lambasting from the Sharks there. No, it doesn't. That's not the time. That's not the time. And the Olympics, like you said, Drew, I think we get them for at least one more, maybe two. Like we said, in the next 2 years, the Wings team is going to finally kind of complete that transition, and the veterans will become the guys like Datsyuk and Zetterberg. They will be the new veterans on this team, and you'll be backfilling with a lot of this young talent that's coming up. So it'll be interesting. I think that gives the time for Brendan Smith to mature into the defenseman that we all hope he can be. So
he was a beast in the NCAA. I actually got to watch him on the TV. Mm-hmm. During that tournament, because I hadn't seen him really play up until this year, and that kid's gonna be good.
He's a future first pairing defenseman. I mean, there's no doubt about it, and I think Malik brought it up. It's just a matter of how does he get through his first full professional season of hockey? How does he make that adjustment? And I think there's a fair chance we get to see him play a little bit this year. Maybe it's for a couple games, whatever. Just kind of break him in. He's waiver exempt. He can move back and forth. So it'll definitely be interesting to see how it goes down. But Nick, if you listen to this show, and that's a big F, but man, two more years. Why not, man? Why not? Two more years. Your kid will be graduating from high school. You can go back to Sweden. It'll still be there. There's nothing wrong with it, man. Two more years in Detroit. Win yourself a cup. Get the transition made and then retire a happy, happy man with more money than you even know what to do with. So we'll see. Decision Gate 10 rolls on, and I have a feeling it's going to be rolling on for a few more weeks. But, you know, guys, it's been a great show. It's been a lot of fun having all of you guys back on. Always a pleasure having Andy from Fight Night at the Joe come over and talk to us from across the pond. Jess from Bingo Bango is busy making the muffin basket for Lidstrom right now. It's always a blast to have you on the show. And obviously, Drew, the first time of many times that you will be on this show chatting with us. It is a blast to finally get you on here. So, If you guys want to check out Andy at Fight Night at the Joe on his, that's his blog. Jess is over at Bingo Bango, and then you can hit up Drew at Nightmare on Helm Street. Always entertaining. I don't know how you post so much, dude. Seriously. Every time I turn around, you are like on fire with posts galore. So mad props to you, man. Mad props to you. But, and then you can check me out at MotownWings.com, obviously where I'm always at. But want to keep up with everything related to the Obstructed View, check us out on Twitter at twitter.com/RedWingsOV, or you can just follow us at RedWingsOV. Keep those questions coming. I know we've got a bunch. We've got some special guests coming on next week during the show, so send some questions in. You can shoot them to us at theobstructedview@gmail.com. Yeah, but guys, it's been great. It's been awesome having you on, and we will be back with everybody next week. We'll be talking some conference playoffs. We'll be talking about what's going on in the NHL, and maybe we'll have a little more clarity on what's going on with this the roster situation in Detroit. So, until then, Chris Hollis signing off, and we'll talk to you next week.